All right, you are listening to WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 FM. I am Richard Brown. This is the Richard Brown Show, Substantive African-American Communication. I am joined right now with my guest, Sharon Heal. She's an author and a speaker and an MBA and spent more than 20 years as a development and marketing manager at Fortune 500 giant IBM. She is the president of Sharon Heal International with her motivational and educational speaking business. She is a certified etiquette trainer, trained by the American Business Etiquette Trainers Association, member of the National Speakers Association, and Toastmasters International, Lieutenant Governor of Education and Training. Sharon is also a certified communicator for Duke University. She has served on several boards of directors and currently on the Big Brothers and Big Sisters Board of Directors and the National Association of Women's Business Owners. She is also the Vice President of Marketing for Geeks On Call. We definitely have to talk about that.
Yes.
Her husband's computer repair and service business. She's an author of four books that focus on etiquette, succeeding in college, and corporate America. She is, of course, a member of the National Association of Black MBAs, the Raleigh chapter, and is a faculty advisor at the University of North Carolina Multicultural Leadership Institute. I want to thank her. With all of the personal and professional endeavors she has going on, she took time out to join my show. And I want to thank her for that. So let's jump right in. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Richard. I'm just fine.
I am so glad that you are able to come out. I know there's just a lot going on. And I know we're going to get into some of that. Mm-hmm. But I want to personally thank you for coming on.
I'm honored, Richard, to be here with you. Thank you.
All right. Now, you've come on the show before, and we've talked about your books and talked about just etiquette and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I guess I wanted to kind of get an update. What's going on with you and then kind of move in from there?
Well, sure. In terms of my business.
Yes, of course.
I'm being called from all over the country. Mm-hmm. To give etiquette training. Mm-hmm. And I'm just delighted because my website has garnered a lot of attention in terms of people Googling etiquette. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I'm African-American. Mm-hmm. They tell me, you know, we really need this. Mm-hmm. For our people in terms of we're being watched. We have to do it three times better. And there we are. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a lot of work with Fayetteville State. And I'm also working a lot with Duke, with mm-hmm. UNC, University of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I've gone as far west as Fort Hays State University in mm-hmm. Hays, Kansas. Never heard of it. Not a minority school by any means, but still, I'm getting majority and minority business mm-hmm. for teaching etiquette mm-hmm. and diversity. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving it, Richard. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you're busy doing a lot of plane hopping and train hopping, perhaps.
And ships. I've been training on cruise ships as well.
Oh,
and that's
that
been fun.
Sounds fun.
Yes,
sounds
life
fun.
Is good.
Yeah, what was the last cruise ship that you got on?
Royal Caribbean. It was the Black Capital Jazz Cruise, mm-hmm. which is the third time. It'll mm-hmm. be the fourth time this year, fourth mm-hmm. annual jazz cruise. Mm-hmm. So the whole cruise has jazz performers on there, smooth jazz performers, mm-hmm. and the whole ship belongs to us, mm-hmm. and it's fun. But the difference is, on those cruises, I'm not teaching etiquette or diversity. I'm teaching poker, and I'm in charge of the Bid Whist tournament. And in charge of the spades tournament, and in charge of the dominoes tournament, which are my other passions.
Right.
Is life sweet or what?
That's right. I need to do a show about Biz Whisk, but a lot of people, I know a lot of particularly older African Americans who are very adamant and
passionate.
And I remember in college, a lot of folks played spades and tonk was kind of
the
but Bid Whist.
Bidwhist. Bidwhist.
It's the thing.
It is passionate. Right, and we have so much fun on the ship. We almost have to call in the referee when we play Bid Whist because people in different states have different rules.
Okay, I have to ask you this question. Do you throw etiquette out the window? Because now I've seen how it goes and I know how spades is.
Oh, yes.
And there is a lot of trash talking.
Yes.
Now, so perhaps walk me through how you're going to be in in the correct etiquette while you're trash talking?
Well, it's a difference when I'm training and in charge of tournaments. I'm on my best behavior.
Okay, okay.
I'm
okay.
Just like we a dealer. I have a bow tie. I have a tuxedo on. I'm on my best behavior. But when I'm playing, Katie by the door. I told person who played the wrong card, "Are you out of your mind?" And of course, you know all the signals when you have the set card. You put it on your forehead. You put it on your glasses. Right, you slam it down. Right, so I throw etiquette out the window when I'm a player.
When you play,
when you're a referee,
you are
very
professional.
Very professional. Okay. Like, let's behave. They're doing the same things that I do when I'm playing.
Of course, of course. Because they're playing.
They're playing. That's the rules. You got to talk stuff.
Yeah.
And spades the same way.
Yeah. Spades is everybody. And I've said this, everybody doesn't need to sit down at the spades table. There are some, there's like, it's almost like there's a kiddie pool.
That's right.
And then there's like the pool that has the deep end.
Right.
You got to be very clear about which pool that you're about to get into.
Absolutely. We had one poor old woman on the last cruise ended up crying for just what you said. She was in the big, at the big table, and the woman said, I matched them together because they both came by themselves. Mm-hmm. Big mistake.
Right.
The older lady left crying because they tore her up because she wasn't serious
enough. She wasn't serious
enough. It's serious. That's spades.
Oh, yeah. Very, very serious. So you're doing the traveling. Tell me, are you still writing? Are you in the process of producing another book? And talk about what that book is and kind of how that came about.
Just completed my last book, which is going on Amazon.com. Should be any day now. That's my fourth book. When I said fourth book, I just finished that one and got that up there. Now I'm debating what my fifth book should be. Someone told me to write about the rising black professional. I like to give training instructions. I like to give reference type material. If somebody has a question, they can go to my book and find an answer. Mm-hmm. So I'm still debating what I want my fifth book to be. Mm-hmm. I've got just a series of things. I also thought of doing one on travel, for example. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to flight attendants and find out what are the do's and don'ts when you're traveling. Mm-hmm. How do you tip, which I have sprinkled throughout my earlier books, but compile it and focus on travel. Because once again, even though my primary audience is the minority audience, I'm finding that the majority audience as well says we need it as well. So plus I get more coverage when I write to everybody. Mm-hmm. But I really want to focus on us in terms of we just don't know. When you fly first class, what does that mean? What are the differences? What if someone were to tell a person who's traveled two or three times, we're moving up to first class, what does that mean? How do you act? Mm-hmm. There is specific etiquette for traveling and for first class as well. Mm-hmm. So you can't act like, oh my gosh, this is so fantastic. How are you supposed to act like you're used to this sort of thing? Mm-hmm. And most of us are just so enthralled with how fabulous it is. The world looks at us and says, we're not used to anything. So I want to train people how just carry yourself as if this is no big deal. I'm used to this. I was raised first class, so it's no problem, even if you've never seen before in your life. So this is what I focus on my book. So that's what might be on travel.
It might be on travel. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll talk about the fourth book that you mentioned. We haven't had a chance to talk about that. Yes. Tell me about the ideas behind this book.
The fourth book is a spinoff of my first book, The Wild Woman's Book, The Wild Woman's Guide to Etiquette.
Okay.
I got a lot of questions.
You said The Wild
Woman's. Wild Woman's Guide to Etiquette.
Woohoo!
Some men say, can I read this book? I'm not a wild woman. I said, no, I'm the wild woman. You can read my book. And there we are. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of questions throughout my seminars. Mm-hmm. I got questions online. How do you do this? How do you do that? So I compiled my last book, which is called Don't Be the Ugly Duckling at the Peacock Party. Mm-hmm. It's better to strut than to waddle. And it's a compilation, Richard, of all the questions and beyond. What is etiquette for the symphony? Mm-hmm. What is etiquette when you're visiting someone in the hospital? Is there etiquette for elevators, escalators? Mm-hmm. I go into all the common, comfortable etiquette questions that people don't give a second thought to, but because we're always being watched, we're being judged. Mm-hmm. So that book goes into all those extra things that my first book didn't cover or expands more the things that were in my first book. Mm-hmm. So it's just more typical, everyday etiquette problems that people just don't give a thought to. Mm-hmm. For example, you're riding an escalator. You're with your wife. Who's supposed to go first when the escalator's going up? And who's supposed to go first when the escalator's coming down, you or your wife? Mm-hmm. And there's a specific answer for the direction of the escalator. Mm-hmm. I talk about things to that detail. Do you know the answer?
I would assume going up, the wife would get off first, and coming down, the husband would get off first.
Absolutely. And do you know why?
I don't know. That just sounds right to me. I don't necessarily have the reasons, but I think it has something to do, the getting down, coming down, it's... I would assume that has something to do with. I guess they both have something to do with chivalry, as in when you go up, you let the woman enter first.
Yes.
And then coming down, it's almost like, okay, I'm ex-military, so you know I'm posting guard here.
Right.
As
the, that's
right, making sure that
yes.
Yeah.
So you've actually hit upon it without the exact reason. You've actually hit upon it. It is chivalry. That's because if the lady were to stumble or if the escalator were to stop, you're there to catch her.
Mm.
So it is chivalry. Mm. You're right on target. Mm. So things like that are in my book. Fun stuff. You got it, Richard.
So my reasons are a little off, just a little off, but
you got it.
right. Okay. Well, I will make sure to do that next time I'm on the elevator with my wife.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she'll probably look at me like,
What are you doing? You're being chivalrous.
That's
and
right.
There we are on escalators.
That's right. So you've traveled across the country. Now I also know that your business and we'll take a moment to kind of give the name and the website for the business.
Right.
But the business is actually also has an international flavor too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
because you're traveling and things
mm-hmm.
of that nature. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how etiquette may be different in either different countries or at least. As you have experience, as you're doing traveling.
Yes, one of the things that people call me for, especially real estate agents, Richard, is in dealing with people from different cultures.
I got you.
How do you deal with people? And there's a book I'd like to recommend for anyone who has to deal with folks from different cultures so you can respect them and they admire you because you respect their culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands by mm-hmm. Terri Morrison, T-E-R-R-I, Morrison. And what she does is take 16 different countries where we do business primarily
mm-hmm.
and give some of the cultural aspects of it. So, for example, I always teach United States, you shake hands with people when you first see them. For business
mm-hmm.
and networking, you shake hands
mm-hmm.
and how to give a proper handshake. However, to the real estate agents, let's say a person from India is coming with his wife to look at a house.
Mm-hmm.
You're not to shake hands with that wife. You only deal with the man. These are for the Orthodox Indians who aren't as westernized.
Gotcha.
You don't touch the woman. I also just learned that there's certain Jewish culture, it's called shalom, I won't say it, in which some Jewish people, it's against their religion to shake hands with a person of the opposite sex unless they're a relative.
Mm.
I just learned that 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So etiquette, like law, like medicine, is always evolving, so I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if you got your hand out to shake hands with someone who's not supposed to shake your hand, you may feel offended yourself because they don't reciprocate.
Understood.
When actually it's their culture. So that's one of the things. Chopsticks, how to eat with chopsticks, how you're supposed to place chopsticks. For example, if you put your chopsticks straight up in rice, that's supposed to be the symbol of death, so you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Little tips, because you can offend someone from another culture without even knowing
mm-hmm.
if you haven't been educated.
Talk a little bit about that. I think that, you know, if I had to ask you to write a book, the book I would ask you to write is the cavalier attitude that we as Americans have about the majority of this. You know, I think I'm very confident there are people that are listening to the show and saying, oh, this really doesn't matter.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's not that big a deal. Or, you know, I give you a perfect example. You know, I hear all the time and see it on different boards about how folks make the comments that, you know, Hispanic people just need to learn English. This type of cavalier attitude where you're in my country now and you just need to learn English. Could you speak, please, on why that attitude is not helpful? It's not. There's a whole list of things, but mm-hmm. but let me not get on my soapbox. Let me let you do.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a big proponent of what you're just saying in terms of we are so, your word cavalier, the term the ugly American.
Yes.
We just believe that we are the center of the universe, and that's majority and minority as well in terms of African Americans and a lot of white mm-hmm. Americans, Caucasian Americans, because we're taught, even we turn the history books have been written incorrectly, that Columbus discovered America. America was, this land was already here.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't discover America. Mm-hmm. A lot of controversy about that. But the way it can hurt you, the way it can hurt a person's company is because it's all about the dollar. It's about two things, actually. It's about the dollar, and it's about pumping up your own professionalism. If you want your company to be able to sell to other cultures and get the money, you have to understand that culture or hire people of that culture so that they can make your commercials. For example, did you hear about the one that failed for some company? Oh, Toyota. I think it was Toyota some years ago, did a commercial. They wanted to target African-Americans. So they had African-Americans in the commercial talking about mom's great lasagna. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, we eat lasagna, but is it predominantly one of our dishes? Big mistake. And folks laughed at it. You got to be kidding me. There goes some money they could have had by screwing it up, by being so cavalier in there. Well, we're just going to put some people in here and hope they'll understand. Personally, Richard, if you snub your nose at someone, an example you gave, why don't they just learn to speak English, you're doing yourself a disservice as far as getting into that culture, understanding that culture, and growing yourself to understand the value that that person, that that culture has. I'll give you an example of when I was traveling to India with my husband. We stopped off in Paris to change planes. A gentleman was pushing a passenger in a wheelchair, and he was saying in French, whatever French is, excuse moi, whatever, get out of the way. An ugly American who was on our plane said, "Why don't you speak English?" We're in Paris, right. And he said, "Why don't you speak English?"
Right.
What do you think my thoughts were about that ugly American immediately? I may see him for business. You never know. He may need me for a reference. You never know. I would say, don't touch him. He's crude and he's ignorant.
Right.
We have got to learn to appreciate the other cultures for all they offer us, for our own personal growth, and also to help our businesses grow if that's the case.
That's very well put, and I want to thank you. Because, I mean, again, I just hear this type of, and some people call it culture wars, but I think it's, there is a portion of it that's culture wars, but I think another portion of it is, again, what we value. And are we valuing each other in a way that is about lifting not just ourselves up, but lifting others up? And I just feel like in our society that we're losing that with this, the battles between the Democrats and the Republicans, the battles between, you know, the Dukes and the Carolinas.
Oh, yeah, which is real.
Yeah, which is very real. You know, it's very, very real. But I mean, but we're losing the chivalry. We're losing the ability to be open to what other people have to offer. Because it's different.
It's different. And Richard, because everybody wants to be, not everybody, most people want to feel superior to someone. Mm-hmm. So if they don't speak English, automatically we consider ourselves superior. But take it another level. Within the black race, within the Brazilian race, within the Puerto Rican race, there's still gradations of where I have to feel superior based on the person's color, based on the person's hair texture, based on the person's language, based on the person's education. All of us have this need to feel superior in some way. And what I'm hearing you say is where the world should be is that instead of saying I am better than you, it's to say, let me understand you and let me learn your culture so that we can relate better and altruistically have a better world. But we're so into ourselves, the Democrats, the Republicans, this is my world, this is this wall, we can never cross it or we're traitors. Doesn't make sense. It's sickening, but that's the way it is, which is also why I talk about when you're interviewing for a job, how I'm trying to teach. One company has called me in to say we have a complete white executive staff, and yet when we interview minority people, the executive staff at a networking event cluster together, talk about golf, rather than reaching across and trying to talk to someone who may not even have a college education but has started his or her own company. Because after all, I'm an executive and you're uneducated, when actually they need that company to help their company succeed.
Right. Talk about what do you tell those white, and I'm going to assume predominantly male.
Executives.
About how do you start to bridge that gap? Or at least before you even start to bridge that gap, I think there really is this idea of being aware that there's a problem.
Yes.
Or not, maybe not even a problem, but being aware there's a preferred mode of behavior that you all are doing, a preferred mode that you are already operating on, and that there are other ways of doing it.
I took a two-pronged approach. First, I talked to the minority team, saying, when you go to a networking event, here are the do's, here are the don'ts at a networking event. A lot of them tried to follow that, but then found that nobody would come talk to them. And in some cases, they were too intimidated by the white population to go talk to the white population. Those who did found themselves speaking another language, and it became icy and very uncomfortable. So the second approach I have is, and I've been called in to do this, is now go to the white executives and take a gentle approach, but be very blunt at the same time, saying, you've got a problem. You may not know it, but you've got a problem. But I'm going to start it in a way by talking small talk. Let's talk about how to do small talk. I'm going to have examples. And we're going to practice how you talk to a stranger. Then we're going to have some minority people come in, and now you talk. And then afterwards, I'm going to say what was comfortable and what was uncomfortable about it. So they can, rather than being preached to, I want the epiphany of them to say, you know, I couldn't find any common ground. I couldn't find. So I'm going to talk to them about common ground. Why are we all here? It's about the business. That's one thing you can all talk about. The most common things in small talk are weather, sports, things that are innocuous. No one should be offended. I'm going to teach them how to start with the small things. And then I'm going to teach them how to trigger the next question over the answer they just got. So, for example, where were you born? Well, I was born in Clinton, North Carolina. Clinton, North Carolina. Where is Clinton? What do you like about Clinton? Is your family still in Clinton? Get the comfort level going by asking and listening to what they're saying, as opposed to we have nothing in common. Nothing to talk about. I'm going to overcome that bridge.
Talk a little bit about how I know, I guess because I have so many different conversations with so many different people, and I'm a kind of aware about what's going on in the news, and, you know, and I am watching either the healthcare debate or maybe even the stuff about Tiger Woods or, you know, any number of kind of just kind of current events going on, I'm kind of aware of, because, you know, you just kind of need to have those things in your back pocket as you're having a radio conversation. But you're meeting someone for the first time, and say, for example, you're in an interview, and the conversation abruptly kind of goes from kind of light and into I've really put my foot in it.
Oh dear.
How do you extract your foot and leave the on the floor?
If you feel, oh my Lord, oh I should not have said that or whatever, based on your personality, introvert or extrovert, I always say be honest. If you can judge from the body language that, oh my goodness, I shouldn't have said that, or ooh, that was insulting or whatever, is to fall on your sword and admit it, to diffuse the discomfort using your own style. Humor is a great way to diffuse discomfort. Like, I shouldn't have said that, should I? Or, oh, my bad, or something, or forgive me, ask for forgiveness, or whatever. But don't act like it didn't happen, because then you're going to have a tension developing that the person won't be really listening or focusing on you in a positive way because you just stepped in it. So ideally, fall on your sword, admit I made a mistake, ask forgiveness, try to use some humor, and then move on. But you've got to diffuse it.
And I don't know about you, but there is this belief that males in particular have a hard time apologizing, or at least my wife says, at least I have a hard time apologizing. And I don't, of course, I don't believe that.
You don't believe that?
I don't believe that.
But, not true.
But what I was asking is, you know, do you have steps or tips in your book that help, for example, males or anybody in general to say, you know what, when they recognize that they may have done something inappropriate, and say, you know what, what's the best way for me to go about apologizing? Because for a lot of people, you know, there is this sense that, well, I just don't apologize.
Thank you. And that's shooting yourself in the foot. I have not written about that, but that's a good fodder for one of my future books. What I have written about is black men telling me they've been automatically intimidated as soon as they walk into a room. For my MBA thesis, that's what I put in as far as
remember
we talked about that.
Yes, I remember that.
So if you're going through an interview in the same process, know as a black man talking to perhaps a white woman or even a black man, there's going probably, not 100%, there's probably going to be some level of tension, some level of nervousness on the other person's side. And the world is getting, I love to say the world is getting more Star Trek, that maybe we won't be seeing this kind of color, but we're not quite there yet. So what I say in one of my books is humor. Humor is always a way to diffuse, especially for black men. And the taller, the darker skinned the man, the more the people are either intimidated or just don't like you because you're black. So humor is one way to diffuse it. if you're comfortable using humor, because if you use humor the wrong way, now that's just backfired.
Right.
And in terms of apologizing, even though I haven't addressed it, it's a fascinating topic, in terms of, I would just say generally, if you apologize, you're humbling yourself, and a lot of people don't want to be humbled in front of anyone. But when you're humbled, you're more accepted, and that diffuses a lot of tension as well. If a person has that hang up, if indeed it is a true, I cannot apologize, it's like asking directions. The stereotypic man does not ask directions.
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Because it might show a weakness. I don't know where I'm going. This is all inside the person's head, but it can backfire big time if you're trying to make a positive impression. For example, if I'm walking into a doorway or walking into a corner and a person and I almost bump each other, I say, excuse me, with a smile, even though I haven't done anything. That excuse me softens the situation. And when you soften the situation, you now open the door to better communication.
Do you believe, and I guess it's a trick question, because I believe this. I believe there are just people who are in a sourpuss mood.
Yes.
All day. Mm-hmm. And I believe it affects their body. The tension in their body. I believe it affects how they carry themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. And I believe that people make snap judgments about you just based on how you carry yourself. Are you smiling? You know, I mean, as a almost 6 foot black male with dreads, you know, it's interesting how many people say to me, wow, you know, you always seem in a pretty good mood. And I'm just like, and it's because I'm smiling. And you know, and just not, you know, with a frown on the face. Or, I mean, now, this is not all the time, because you can't be in a great mood all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but enough where people notice.
That's the secret of my success. I think I was born with a happy gene. I think you're born with a happy gene. I think CNN said about a year ago, they have found that there is a gene for happy and a gene for not happy. Mm-hmm. Those of us who have the happy gene tend to smile automatically. Mm-hmm. That means people are drawn to us. Smiling is universal. Mm-hmm. And no matter what your mood, people don't care what your problems are. People don't care if you've got a headache. People don't care if you had an argument with your spouse. They don't care. When you're smiling, you're drawing them into you. And strong eye contact, they're drawn into you. Yes, some people are just grouchy. Now, that's where extroverts have an edge over the introverts, because an introvert could be happy but stoic.
You can't tell.
Mm-hmm. And that snap judgment said, don't want to be around them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you walk in smiling, you're drawing. People want to talk to you. People want to touch you. People want to just converse with you. So, yes, some people do carry that sourpuss expression. They may have the negative gene and can't help it, but they do themselves a disservice in looking for a job, in trying to get ahead. Not all the time, I'm speaking very generally now, but you hit it when you said smile.
Mm-hmm.
Smiling gets you so much more in life than just that constant downturned mouth or the furrowed brow. You got to try to be aware of how people are looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit it around the head. Smile.
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 Smile. You are listening to WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 FM. I am Richard Brown. I am joined by an international star, Sharon Hill. And if you could, please take a moment and check out our website at WCOMFM.org. You'll find out our programming there. You'll find out how to contact us, and you'll, of course, be able to donate to our little piece of radio universe. So I want to talk with you about, if you don't get the call back, or talk a little bit about the etiquette in this particular economic market. It's really rough out there. I was having lunch with some professors, and they were talking about they're in their mid-50s, and they know white males who are professional white males who have been unemployed for a year or 2 years, and they're ashamed and don't necessarily talk about it. You know, that's on a micro level, but I have also seen on a macro level that there has been jobs that have gone away and are not coming back. Talk about, how do you move forward in this type of economy?
I have a Pollyanna answer, and then I have a reality answer. My Pollyanna answer is, sometimes when you lose your job, it could be the best thing that's ever happened to you, because now you're forced to say, what will I do with my life? Ideally, find out what your passion is. Now, I say Pollyanna because this is easier said than done, Richard. People I know from IBM who've been all over, who've been laid off, no job possibility in sight. Realize when there's one job opening, you have 60 to 100 to 300 people applying for it. I can talk about how to give you an edge, but in terms of maybe you should think about opening your own business. And one of my books I talk about, just don't say, I'm going to open up a business. It takes a lot of research, takes a lot of time, a lot of planning, and being willing to accept advice as to do's and don'ts, what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You can't just go out grandiose and say, I'm going to open up a dress shop because I like dresses. Mm-hmm. You're going to fail. Mm-hmm. So the Pollyanna answer is figure out what makes you happy. Some people I know who made six figures are working in a flower shop. Extremely happy. They don't make nearly as much money. The reality answer is think about why you want to work for someone else. It comes down to security, to insurance, health insurance merely, really, and the money to just be able to come and go and do what you want to do. Yet, everyone who has left corporate America, which is my world, and started their own businesses or worked in something that was less labor intensive in terms of managing 100 people around the world, traveling 3 weeks out of four, never seeing their family, have found themselves, not all, have found themselves doing almost menial jobs, a barista at Starbucks, but based on your personality, but loving it.
Right.
They're dealing with people the whole time. We are so conditioned in this country that we have to have the, if you have this car, I have to have a bigger car, or if you have this house, I have to have a bigger house. We're so focused on the capitalistic society, we lose track of what makes us happy. And with that comes disease, with that comes ulcers. I went to a meeting once, slightly off the subject, with a bunch of executives, and they said, now, what do you take for your heartburn? So what do I take for my heartburn? And they were having a...
Just matter-of-factly.
Matter-of-factly. Is it Rolaids? Is it Tums? Is it Maalox? What are you talking about? That comes with the territory of the big book's jobs.
Right. That stress.
So I can't tell you exactly how to get another job, but I can tell you, do some introspection and say, do we cut down a little bit? Do we get a smaller house? Are we forced to foreclose? Therefore, what does this mean? Foreclosure isn't the end of the world. It's what your health and your family and your love and your passion for things that makes you happy, as opposed to chasing after this dollar. And I got to have the bigger, better. So in a way, it can be a blessing. But what I do tell people who are interviewing for a job, especially over a meal, I tell you how to have an edge over those other 60 people who may be doing exactly the same thing you're doing. If your resumes are exactly the same, you went to a prestigious or a non-prestigious school, you had a strong GPA, you had a strong experience with your last company, all things being equal, how can you have an edge? That's where I come in to talk to people about how to have that edge. And back to what you said earlier, how people can like you. Keep in mind, sometimes the paper can be thrown away. They're looking you in the eye and trying to figure out, do I love, do I trust? And they have, there's tactics now that HR professionals have told me, companies who are hiring are practicing now, that you can be torpedoed without even knowing it, because they've had to go to this level because there's so many people applying for the same job. For example, they say, let's go have lunch. This is a tactic now. Let's go have lunch. You're not there to eat, but a lot of folks say, oh boy, I'm going to get a free lunch. And forget they don't even know they're being watched. It's clinical how they're being watched. If you season your food before you eat it, that's a negative. You're considered to be strong-willed, set in your ways, and probably not a team player because you've seasoned the food before you've even tasted it.
I can see that.
See, if you order something that's more expensive than your hosts, that's a negative.
Right.
So what you're supposed to do is say, ask, what are you going to have? And then find something cheaper, same or cheaper than what they're having. If they order the Cobb salad,
team player,
the Chateaubriand, you're not going to be responsible with our money. You're just spending money like crazy.
Right.
You're hungry and you're ordering something that you're going to like. Even down to the point, Richard, if you take your food and season with too much ketchup, that's considered childish. We don't want somebody that immature working for our company.
Right.
Little tactics that can torpedo, but most people don't know this, but they have to have some kind of a differentiator because there's so few jobs and so many people. So these are the tactics they put in place, which I can talk to and help people get a differentiator.
Wow. So no ketchup.
No ketchup.
No salt. No pepper, at least until you taste.
Until you taste. The only exception is salad. When they come around with the pepper mill, that's the only exception when they come around because you're being watched.
Right. Well, you know, I guess at the end of the day, we are in a society where, let's be clear, we want to be watched. You have YouTube. You have all these different social networking. So we are comfortable with being watched. And it's all, I mean, it's almost to the point where we're all watching each other.
And judging.
Oh, yes. Lots and lots of judging. Well, why did they put that on Facebook? You know, I hear that all the time. You know, why? You know, they shouldn't have put that little tidbit of information on Facebook. I think that was too much information. And, you know, and I mean, you know, at the end of the day, just about everything about everybody's personal life and professional life. And you mentioned it before. If you hit Google and type in that person's name, you know, I mean, with a name like Richard Brown, it's so common that there's lots of us.
Right,
but
right.
Once you get to the right one,
yes,
you still can't find
just reams
and reams of information about, you know, either what I stand for, you know, what I believe in, what I've done, mm-hmm. what I haven't done, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera.
You've just hit upon another point about getting another job.
Yeah.
Because all companies are going to your Facebook. All companies are going to your LinkedIn. All companies are listening for what message you have on your phone when they call. Is it baby's got back? Or
right,
is it something dignified? Hello, you've reached Richard Brown. Please leave
yes.
your message. Those are other factors. And that Facebook can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other one? MySpace.
MySpace.
The teenager, the younger. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can
mm-hmm.
kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be professional because you're being watched mm-hmm. on that as well, especially by potential employers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just saw. It's to the point now where, for example, I read in the newspaper where, what's the guy who just lost his job to Jay Leno?
Conan O'Brien
lost his job. And so I guess in the contract, he can't do TV. He has a certain amount of time. He can't do TV. And so he decided he was going to pick one person on Twitter to follow. And this young lady, I think she was from Middle America, and she was in the process of getting married. And all of a sudden now people are sending her some business is sending her a computer, and somebody's sending her a wedding dress.
It's just how
powerful, you know, this idea of everybody's watching everybody.
Yes.
And all of a sudden he just picked, and he said it was random. It was random.
And look how he's changed her life.
Changed her life, you know.
My
and I mean,
goodness.
You know, I mean, like, you know, I believe everybody's looking for the 6 minutes of fame. And you know, and when you actually get it, what do you do?
What do you do with it?
What do you do?
And you can blow it by being so unprofessional, like people mm-hmm. who win the lottery, so go crazy, lose their minds.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world knows now. And if your reputation is important to you, you've just blown it.
Yeah.
What common sense?
Well, I would say even deeper than that. I mean, you have family.
Oh, thank you.
Know.
You.
And
that's
you
right.
I mean, you extension. Have family, and you have responsibilities to more than just yourself
mm-hmm.
to, you know, if the lottery is what, you know, what we're talking about, then
mm-hmm.
to just take this money and just kind of go on a worldwide tour.
That guy in West Virginia, the owner who had the biggest single lottery winner ever, everything went to hell with him. Everything went. His mm-hmm. wife said if she'd known their lives would be that bad, she would have torn up the ticket. He
wow.
went crazy. You're right. But some people just go, money. Mm-hmm. Money just changes people, Richard, mm-hmm. as you know. It can be mm-hmm. crazy. If you don't have the common sense or the fortitude or the strength, or you don't have your core to say, what am I going to do with this and plan for it? And he was already a millionaire.
Talk about how you develop your core and your core values. Do you spend any time? Because we're not just talking about etiquette. We're also talking about our values.
Our values.
And have you spent time? Because at the end of the day, you may get a job, but that job may not have the values because of whatever either the job is doing or perhaps what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera. I know that you spent some time in one of your books talking about those values and really, really being clear about it.
Yes, I say don't sell out.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a million people, we can have a million different stories as to where their values are.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is one good source, although I believe in some cases religion can every war we've had, I think religion
right, right.
can be just taken too extreme and make you even worse than you were at the beginning. I ask people to think about what's important to you. And a lot of it goes back to before you were 7 years old or before you were 12 years old. Did you have money? Were you entitled? Did you get everything you wanted? Or did you have to struggle for things? Did you have to? You notice most of the millionaires these days, their kids don't seem to do so well because they're so used to everything.
I'm sorry, but there has been a rash of rich and affluent parents whose kids are dying or something's happening. Something's happening. Now, I don't know, but, you know, maybe it's because they are famous that we're hearing about it, and there's many other people who aren't famous and we're just not hearing about it. But it just, it feels that way.
It definitely feels that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You think about countries like Sweden who have, they have everything. Socialized medicine, which I'm a favorite for, with a high suicide rate. They've been given everything. The government takes care of you. You have everything. But it has a high suicide rate. Mm-hmm. These kids you're talking about from rich parents who were given everything. I talked last week about to a woman who said she has a friend whose 13-year-old daughter. She throws a birthday party every year. Mm-hmm. For her 13th party, it cost over $10,000 with the food, with the band, mm-hmm. with everything she brought in for the 13-year-old. And what did the girl do? She complained the limousine was the wrong color. And they're black.
The limousine. The limousine, was the wrong color.
What's going on here? To me, a person who's given everything in life from the day they were born, there's nothing to reach for. There's nothing to be hungry for. There's nothing to be proud of. It's just, it's me, me, me. I want. And allow the parents to say, nothing is too good for my child. When actually, to me, they're doing a disservice to that child. I would send them to Ethiopia and let them live with the poor for a while. I'm picking mm-hmm. Ethiopia, just picked a country. Mm-hmm. Sudan. Go someplace where people don't have so you can appreciate what you have as opposed to feeling entitled. You ever see the show Platinum Weddings where they spend, and the cake costs $10,000. And I just look at it just to get myself angry. Mm-hmm. Do you realize people are, they're keeping the bridal industry going and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Did you, personal question, did you have to struggle at all or did your parents have to struggle at all coming up?
Yes. And I think about that quite a bit. I believe that I am going to be rich is not the word, but very comfortable. Let's use the word very comfortable.
Yes.
In the future. And I think about my children and I think about what, and I'm concerned about this very topic. 'Cause it's not about, when I look at my values, it's about giving them what they need, not necessarily what they want.
Right.
And there's a difference.
Thank you.
And I spend a lot of time thinking about how do I parse that out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess when I reflect back on my own upbringing, you know, my parents gave me what I needed,
yes.
not necessarily what I wanted.
Thank you. You know, in my case.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would get the catalog, and I'd circle stuff come Christmas time.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, I want this, and I want this, and I want that.
Yes,
but,
yes.
you know, but when I look back and reflect, and, you know, and talk to my parents and think about what went down, it was they gave me the things in order to, number one, be happy, to understand that, you know, just because you want something doesn't mean that you're going to get it right away.
Yes.
You may have to work for it.
And appreciate it
and
more.
And appreciate it more. And just don't throw it away.
That's where, back to your original question about the economy, Richard, mm-hmm. I think every curse has a blessing. And the blessing of this curse with the economy is people are having to do with less. The person who's lost their job, who are an executive, and all of a sudden they got to lose, they're going to lose their house, they're going to lose the cars, they're going to lose all mm-hmm. this kind of stuff. How can you now turn this life into something where I may not make as much money, but the children are going to be able to appreciate when they get something as opposed to they just have to have it?
Mm-hmm.
And marketing, to me, is the evil. We call it when they get your brain. What do they call it?
Like the mind meld.
Yes. The mind meld. It's evil in terms of they see things on television. I have to have that. Mm-hmm. I have to have that. And now just because you had this, now you have to have the next one. To the point that people are killing each other,
right.
as we know, in the hood to mm-hmm. get the jacket, to get the shoes, mm-hmm. to get the rims. From the person, one guy killed his cousin to get the rims off her car because he had to have them. This material lust, I think the economy is going to be affecting that. We're going to lose some of that because we just can't afford it anymore unless you kill somebody for it.
Right.
And if your value system says, it's okay, I got them, disregarding the fact you just hurt somebody,
right.
what is that twisted thingy kind of thing?
Right, right. I know that. It's funny because, you know, Wall Street, the movie Wall Street was the epitome of this, the attitude,
good.
You know, and it's very interesting that this, the new Wall Street is coming out. I'll be very interested to see how they kind of deal with that,
mm-hmm.
particularly given this economy and particularly given that there are plenty of people who, are starting to talk about this.
Yes.
I'm starting to hear this from multiple places. just what you're saying, and it'll be interesting to see if they kind of handle this in a new, more PC way.
I wonder. Well, there was a show on a couple of days ago in which the new Wall Street, back to your point about values. You know, of course, how AIC got the bailout and then went and had a $100,000 party the next week.
Yes, yes.
Where's the values in that? If greed is good, I got mine, you get yours. Mm-hmm. That thinking has to change. And now those people are being considered evil. They're being considered bad because they aren't caring about other people. It's all about their own pockets being lined.
Right.
That's a twisted value system. Mm-hmm. But that's what our country has propagated.
Yes, yes. We have about 10 minutes left. In that 10 minutes.
Where'd it go?
We have about 10 minutes. Yeah. In that 10 minutes, I want to make sure before we leave, that you have a moment to let people know what your website is, and how they can get in contact with you. If there's some local bid whisk tournaments that they need to be made aware of, I'll definitely give you a chance to talk about that.
All right. Mm-hmm. My website is www.sharonhillinternational, all spelled out, S-H-A-R-O-N, Hill, H-I-L-L, international.com, sharonhillinternational.com. And there's a contact us on the website, which sends notes directly to my office, and I can see and answer questions people may have or get booked for any speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. Or poker parties or bid whisk parties.
That's right. Some local bid whisk parties.
Yes, yes.
That's right. And I wanted to also ask you how you've written 4 books now, and how can people put their hands
on
the books?
Thank you, Richard. All of my books are online. The first title is The Wild Woman's Guide to Etiquette. If you Google Sharon Hill, I found there's a bunch of authors named Sharon Hill. It's amazing.
Interesting.
So if you go to Amazon.com, I'll give you the exact titles to make it easier. The first book is Wild Woman's Guide to Etiquette, Saving the World One Handshake at a Time. Mm-hmm. That's The Wild Woman's Guide to Etiquette.
When did you write that?
2005.
Okay. It's been about six years. Five years going on six.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Where's the time gone? Goodness. Mm-hmm. My second book is 24 Tips for Students to Succeed in College, which we talked about during one of our visits.
Yep, I remember that one.
That book started because I talked to a professor over at North Carolina A&T, and he gave me so much information as to what's wrong with students these days, how they have the wrong focus.
Gotcha.
Once again, back to the bling, back to the new car, back to getting a husband. I'm thinking very broadly now. Mm-hmm. So much so the dropout rate is atrocious. Right. The dropout and the kickout rate is atrocious. So that book tells you how many hours you need to study based on your credit hours, how many hours you need to work based on your educational load, some real strong algorithms. My third book is 35 Tips to Succeed in Corporate America. Mm-hmm. That was written before the crash and everybody started losing their jobs.
right.
But nonetheless,
that's when Corporate America was actually...
It was still booming a little bit, right? But it's still there. It's got to come back. Mm-hmm. 35 Tips to Succeed in Corporate America with the number 35. Mm-hmm. And my fourth book, as I mentioned, is Don't Be the Ugly Duckling at the Peacock Party. Don't be the Ugly Duckling at the Peacock Party. Back to etiquette. So my first and my fourth are dealing with etiquette. And my second and third are more dealing with culture and diversity and just individual growth, how to succeed.
And you said that it should be out in Amazon.
Amazon.com. It takes six to eight weeks to get on there. So any day now it should be up there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you submitted it. And you found there to be just a wonderful overflowing of positive. I mean, do you sometimes get people who are negative, and how do you deal with that?
I think of what Deepak Chopra, MD, PhD, talks about in terms of happiness versus how we choose to accept people and judge people, whatever. And also Dr. Wayne Dyer, D-Y-E-R, is a book I read that changed things. And that is, we have a choice. We have a choice to accept a negative person or to dismiss a negative person. Most of the time, I will make an effort to get underneath, not in a psychological way, but let's cast that aside. Let's just talk as people. Mm-hmm. But some people just don't want to open up, don't want to crack, don't want to be bothered. Fine. Mm-hmm. I choose to say that's fine. Mm-hmm. Have a nice day and move on rather than dwelling on, why don't they like me? Why don't they talk to me? Is something I said? No, that's all negative thinking, and I don't want to have any negative thinking in my mind. I'll just dismiss them. Love them and dismiss them.
Do you have a either a mantra or a process that helps you to reinvigorate the positive energy on a daily basis?
I would say overall, our life experiences lead us to where we are in terms of our thinking. Mm-hmm. And there's been so much death and negativity in my life that my mantra would be, I could be dead tomorrow. And if I'm, because some drunk driver crossed the double yellow line.
That's right.
If I'm dead tomorrow, what am I leaving? Who did I say something to that I may have offended? What are they going to think about me? What is my legacy? How am I helping other people that they say, you know, she helped me do this and that. I get my joy in knowing somebody thanks me or appreciates something that I've done. Mm-hmm. Call that selfish, but it works both ways.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My mantra is there's no guarantee in life. I've had death happen in family. They're here one day, they're gone the next. My sister when she was 12, my father when I was 12, gone. And when you look at somebody in the casket, no, that's it. Mm-hmm. Unless you're religious, no, they've gone someplace else. They're being reincarnated. Mm-hmm. But as far as my person, the love, they're gone. And I'm going to be in that casket one day, or I might be cremated one day. Could be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
But it's not all about me. What am I doing for others? What is my legacy? Mm-hmm. And I don't have time to be unhappy. Mm-hmm. Things happen. You know my personal stuff with my mom and all. Mm-hmm. Things happen. But I choose to say, so be it. Now let's move on. Mm-hmm. Keeps me going. Keeps me from getting an ulcer.
Mm-hmm. And it's very important. I think mm-hmm. that there are a lot of people. You know, what I found, I mean, going back to this, because I think it's very, very, very related, is that the people who have everything, who have a comfortable job, are not happy.
They're not happy. There's no challenges and nothing to appreciate.
Right. And you know, and so then when you have everything before you and you're not happy, it's time to look within.
Instead of turning to drugs.
Really. Or drugs, sex, money, or whatever
your rush, looking for a rush.
Yeah.
And there
are
because you're not happy.
Because you're not happy. Mm-hmm. And yet on the outside looking in, you know, everybody would say, oh, they have it all.
They have a little dog in the purse.
Yes.
They've got everything.
Yes,
how do they
yes.
turn to drugs?
Right.
Why do our basketball players, why do our football players, why do our athletes, speaking very generally, tend to turn to what you've just said in terms of either sex or drugs or when they got all this money?
Well, again, because, you know, money doesn't, at the end of the day, I think that there's a certain point where you have enough money and it's not going to make you happy. You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's a from an economic standpoint, there's a marginal there's diminishing marginal returns as you go up that bell curve as it relates to money. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, folks end up saying, well, number one, I think we end up going back to our childhood, you know, okay, because the regular rules don't apply for me here, you know, so for example, if a millionaire, Tiger Woods, the Michael Jordans of the world, go to a concert, mm-hmm. they don't have to park with everybody else. They go straight to the front. The regular rules don't apply.
You know? The regular rules don't apply.
Really.
Yes.
And so then what they end up doing is, what I believe is and it's not just them, the gentlemen who run the lottery,
yes.
they start to say, what rules do apply? And again, my economic background says, I want to find that line. And sometimes in finding that line, they go over the line.
Over the line.
And what ends up happening is then the rest of us start asking, well, why did they go? I don't understand. Why did they do this? Well, in many cases, when you put people, when they have an abundance of X, That's what happens. So there is this. And again, I think it goes back to this intestinal fortitude. It also goes back to opportunity. You know, I mean, if I believe that if you put 100 people in the room and say there's $1 million, people do some of anything.
I say lose their minds.
Yes. Yes. I really believe that. And so I think what happens is we average people don't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And that if we did, then I think a lot of things would change. So, you know, I think you're right. There are so many blessings that we're not even aware of.
Thank you. Yes.
So many blessings that we're
like
not even
health.
Aware
of.
Yes.
Oh, God. Donating money to. How many people do you hear run the money? I'm going to donate 10% to this
right.
charity or this
yeah.
cause.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to get a Jaguar. I'm going to get a new house. I'm going to travel. I'm going to take up golf. Me.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, back to values.
And all those things, I think at the end of the day, they're not going to make them happy. At the end of the day, I really don't. I think they are nice. And, if somebody gave me a Jaguar, I wouldn't turn it down.
Thank you very much. Not crazy.
I wouldn't say, no.
Right. Oh, but
no,
I can't. Thirst after it. I've got to have that Jaguar.
No.
You're not like that.
Not to lose the balance of life.
Thank
not
you.
To lose, not to give up the joy, of watching my family grow.
That's what's important. That's your value system.
Which is critical. That's for me. So, I guess I need to get you to one more time, give the website, and then we'll have to wrap it up.
Thank you. It's Sharon Hill International, Sharon Hill International, .com.
Okay.
And that they can people can contact me. They can hear some of the shows that we've done before. I have it on the site.
Oh, good.
I have etiquette tips on the site. They can order my books from the site. They can click on it. It goes right to Amazon.com.
Oh, good.
So it's just all one world.
It's
right
all there.
Yes,
it's
indeed.
All there.
And I'm opening up another website called ComfortableEtiquette.com. It's in the design stage right now, in which I'm going to focus. My Sharon Hill International focuses on my business and speaking.
Mm-hmm.
My Comfortable Etiquette focuses on my books and how to become your personal best. It's going to be blogs. It's going to be articles, things like that. So people can just read and comment on them. So one is for the business of speaking, primarily, and the other is for the books and helping people become their personal best. ComfortableEtiquette.com.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you. It's
so
been a
much.
Joy. You're a joy.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming on. And now you have been listening to The Richard Brown Show here on WCOM. Coming up in about 3 minutes is the Carborough Book Beat. I want to thank you all for listening to WCOM today. It is so, so important. And I believe that you gain so much from listening to this station. If you have questions or comments for me, you can check out my website at richardbrownshow.com. There'll be past shows there. There'll be lots of new things that are popping up on my website. And you can send me an email if you want to comment on past shows or you want to send me new ideas for shows. So head on over to that website. And, of course, I will be linking to Sharon's website as well. I want to thank you and have a great, great week.